Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, the latest geek culture news, and whatever movies, TV, and other pop culture is on our radar for the week. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. All right. It's Halloween week, guys.
Yep. Let's have a Halloween party right now.
Do, 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 do. And then we all start dancing.
Yes.
I thought we do the Monster Mash. Is that not what we do?
Oh, that's you're old. Right. We do the Monster Mash. That's and then old. And then David S. Pumpkin shows up.
David S. Pumpkin.
And you guys are like, that's hilarious. And I'm like, I don't get it.
Randy doesn't get David S. Pumpkin.
I don't get David S. Pumpkins.
It's silly.
I get that it's silly. I like Tom Hanks. I'm on board with left skeleton, right skeleton. It didn't make me laugh.
You're not a real Tom Hanks fan.
No, I'm not. I'm not. You know, honestly, ever since Big, it's been downhill. I feel like that was really his peak was Big.
Did you see that they did a spoof of the he was on Colbert and Colbert was the Zoltar thing or whatever?
I did indeed see that. Yeah.
But we're doing a podcast.
All right, we're doing a podcast. Anyway, Halloween Comics Fest is this weekend. It'll be October 29th. We'll give out free comics. Nick and I will be here. Dave will be on vacation because he's a big bummer.
Yeah, but I don't work on Saturdays anyway.
That's true.
Are we beginning, are y'all beginning when you open the store opens at 10?
And we'll start at 10 o'clock, okay. And we'll run until we run out of comics, which shouldn't happen. Although, if you want the ones that are specifically Halloween Comic Fest this year's selections, you want to get here early because we do not have a ton of them because, honestly, the turnout for Halloween Comic Fest has always been a lot lighter than Free Comic Book Day.
Yep.
And we didn't know what we were ordering. So there's in particular a free Dr. Aphra book.
And if y'all don't know, Dr. Aphra is the supporting character from Darth Vader comic, major supporting character,
yep.
Who's about to get her own book.
Right. And we did not know that when we ordered it. It was just Marvel's mystery book.
Yeah.
So we do not have a ton of those. So if that's one you want, get in line early because we can't save them as always. It's first come, first serve. Anyway, though, come out, get free comics. We'll have a bunch of free comics. Okay, on to the news. And there's a fair bit of news this week. Donald Glover has been confirmed as Lando Calrissian in the Han Solo movie.
Did we talk about this one?
No, we talked about one as a rumor and how cool we thought it would be. But yeah. I didn't know if I actually believed it.
You know, I generally liked it, but I think I seem to remember there was some talk that it was like, does he have the suave? Can he bring that? Now, I know that like Lando wasn't always Lando.
Yeah.
But I wasn't sure if he could bring that. But I don't know. Just looking at the pictures and stuff and what I've seen of him. What's his new show?
Atlanta.
And I hear that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, he's great. After seeing, I mean, based on just Community, I thought, okay, well, I like Donald Glover. Right. And based on Mystery Team and everything else, I like, and his writing on 30 Rock. Like, I've always thought Donald Glover's a smart guy and a funny guy. And having seen Atlanta, I'm like, no, Donald Glover can do anything.
Can he play Lando?
He can play Lando. I'm confident.
Nick, what do you think?
I think he can. I mean, he's shown to be pretty good across the board.
So. It's going to be a little baby Lando.
Now, I'm the only one in this room who's actually watched Atlanta, right?
Oh, I've seen the first two.
You've seen the first? Okay, you've seen a couple. So he's not the baby man anymore. He's a little older.
What is his actual age? Probably like 30 or something?
He's 75.
Does anybody actually know?
No, I don't know.
I'm going to say late 20s or 30.
I'm going with 75.
All right.
This is like the Price is Right where you don't go over, right? Is that how Price is Right works?
You might have gone over.
Oh, okay. Don't go under.
But I think he could, I am generally confident in this. The internet seemed very happy about it.
Yep.
And I like the idea of a Lando movie. I'm curious to see, in a way, he's like more of an entrepreneur than a just straight smuggler like Solo was.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's going to be any part of it, or was that just like Bespin his one semi-stable gig?
Yeah, the entrepreneur was later. Remember, Han comments on how different that is for him. Like, he was supposed to be sort of a gambler and a scoundrel
as
well.
Right. So we'll see him, like, gambling through the tables of Nar Shaddaa and stuff like that.
Yep.
Nar Shaddaa.
I'm just saying, there better be a Lobot.
I agree. Lobot or GTFO?
That would be a good thing to pull from the Lando comic, the Lobot as best bud, because that guy was cool in there.
I want to see Lobot when he had hair.
I don't think it works like that.
I think your hair follicles stop growing if you in order to get like the cybernetic implant.
Yeah, this is cybernetic, right? He's like a dude. He's not a robot, right?
Right.
Right. Well, in the comic, he was for sure. You know, because I always thought he seemed sort of businesslike and efficient with his pointing and gesturing for...
You thought maybe he was a robot.
I thought he was kind of more Borg than man, than Psy. Yep.
Ah, okay.
But they did the Lando comic recently, and it was just like Lando's best buddy.
With a robot thing in his head.
So he could do like super cool computations.
That reminds me.
But if you're going to, by the way, count cards or something like that, it probably helps if you don't have a giant computer stuck to your head.
That reminds me, though. Would one of you guys mind getting a Lobot thing attached so you can help me out with stuff?
One of us is already bald, Randy.
I can't. I'm the Lando of this operation.
You got a Lobot yourself, man.
No, I can't. I'm the Lando of this operation.
Well, then I'll have to be the Ugnaught.
What does that make me?
Broken C-3PO.
Yeah, you're the broken C-3PO. You can be our Wookiee.
Except those were not natives of the Bespin. Those are just things that happen there. You can be a Bespin guard.
Yeah, or
you can be an Ugnaught. Or that's it. That's all. That's
one of those cool little speeders.
Yeah, you can have a cloud car.
A cloud car.
You can have a cloud car pilot guy.
But you're gonna have to have a second person pilot the other part. Maybe Chris can fly the other part of the cloud car.
Just gonna crash that thing.
Don't fly a cloud car by yourself, kids.
This is a weird podcast today.
Yep, we're starting off weird. All right, so let's go into our next story. That was one story, by the way.
Yep.
It might be a weird week, folks. Wonder Woman has been named, like, the UN ambassador for girls or something. I didn't fully understand this whole thing.
Oh, we should probably have pulled up the article before we
did. I read it.
She had some sort of UN honorary ambassadorship as a... I think it has to be, like, for girls or something like that.
It is, yeah.
And it was contested, or some people were not a little bit peeved about it because there have been some sexy time depictions of Wonder Woman, I think, and they were like, she's a bad role model.
Also, they were saying that they'd been working on getting a female United Nations General Assembly. What's the leader of the United Nations? I can't believe I'm blanking on this. The head of the United Nations. Kofi Annan was one of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Not the Surgeon General. The Secretary General.
Yeah, yeah.
Surgeon General's entirely different.
And that did not work out, and so they were sort of like, this felt like to them a lame consolation prize. And yeah, they were. Then they did for the
going
for
after the Wonder Woman sounds a little like slut shaming to me.
I agree,
but
that also sounds like you're calling Wonder Woman a slut.
What's that?
That also sounds like you're calling Wonder Woman a slut.
Well, that they are saying that she that the fact that she bears any skin makes her a slut.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's
yeah, Wonder Woman as a character seems like a. I mean.
They actually outright, from the Perez era onward, have very often had her literally as an ambassador from her island.
It makes a lot of sense.
She's like always, she's sort of a peacemaker kind of person and an ambassador. So it does make a lot of sense, but I guess a lot of people think, oh, that's just the pretty chick on the 70s show that somebody's husband jerked off to back in the day.
I think that's also a specific example, specific example. But yes, I think that's probably where it's coming from.
And they're like, we don't like that.
Yeah.
I
think it's misguided. I think it's people who don't know Wonder Woman don't know what she stands for, because absolutely she should be in this role.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like Gloria Steinem and a lot of other people that were like key in the burgeoning feminist movement back in the day, they did kind of take her as an icon.
Yeah.
And so that makes sense too.
Yeah, I pulled up the thing that says an honorary ambassador for the empowerment of women and girls.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
She is the single most known like female superhero, maybe with the possible exception these days of Supergirl.
Yeah.
But I feel like probably still
even
has
then,
more cultural
Wonder
saturation.
Wonder Woman had her 70s show.
Possibly excepting Xena.
Yeah.
They should have made her the ambassador. That would have been pretty badass.
That would have been
actually.
Badass, yeah.
Battle on, Xena. Anyway, so yeah, I would like for those people to chill out and go ahead and accept her as the honorary ambassador because she's cool.
Yeah. And also, on a semi-related note, we were talking about sort of the women's moving forward, that kind of thing. There's an interesting note about Jessica Jones season 2.
Oh, right.
That is going to be entirely directed by women, all 13 episodes. Which is a pretty notable thing.
Yep.
And it's kind of sad that it is a notable thing. It shouldn't be.
Right.
But it's good that to have them, that they're doing that behind the scenes sort of. There's always been people talking about, well, there's diversity in your characters, but there's no diversity behind the camera.
Right.
And it's nice that basically, yeah, women directing Jessica Jones is going to give it a different feel.
Right. I immediately saw in a thread backlash against it and saying that it was like basically reverse sexism or whatever.
There's no such thing as reverse sexism.
Yeah. Yeah, but for poor white men, Randy, we've been burdened so long.
When the Amazons have been in charge for 50 years and the men are being herded into camps, then we can live a reverse sexism.
Yeah, I agree completely.
That's going to happen, right?
I hope so, because that's one of my fantasies.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go by Futurama future.
Okay, fair enough. Also, Nixon's head will be president.
But it's still better than Trump.
There were a few trailers that came out. The Guardians 2 teaser came out.
Guardians of the Galaxy 2?
Guardians of the Galaxy 2 teaser, which is just a little teaser. I mean, it's just got some music. We don't even see Kurt Russell in it. We get a quick glimpse of everything, and then there's that great little nod at the end with Rocket and Baby Groot.
Yes.
Who has a little uniform. It's adorable.
But we see Drax gives hugs now.
We see Drax gives hugs. That's a good scene.
Drax has... I guess maybe I did see this. He has his kind of smart-ass bit with
Peter. Yeah.
Yeah, Peter Quill.
But he's not being a smart-ass because Drax isn't capable of that.
Right.
He's actually being literal.
Yeah. Yeah, when Drax tells you you're pathetic or whatever he says, he means it.
Yeah. That was really fun. They also dropped the Logan trailer.
Yes.
Which people have been going nuts for.
Yeah.
Yep. I think they really like the idea of Old Man Logan, which I will say this, since it's a variant of the Old Man Logan story, a very removed variant, but it does look like it's kind of apocalyptic and stuff.
Yep.
Like, you know, one of those, like the Old Man Logan apocalypse, which is to say lots of bleak landscapes.
Yeah.
Not like, one of those techno-apocalypses or Blade Runner-y kind of thing.
Right.
But yeah, it's just like... Road Warrior looking.
Right.
And
they slotted Xavier in, an older Xavier in as sort of the Hawkeye of the group. He's like his mentor and his backup. They put X-20... That's the one thing they grafted on is this notion of a story where X-23...
Is it for sure
her? It is for sure her.
Okay.
She's not named, but we already knew she'd been cast.
Right.
But that Xavier is sort of trying to get this retired Old Man Logan to come out and help, and he says she's like you. And... I like that because one of the defining things about Wolverine, whether it's the movie version who goes with Rogue or the comic book version with Jubilee and Kitty Pryde, is he always
kind of
tries
mentors.
To protect. He always mentors a young girl.
Yeah,
and so it makes a lot of sense. And then the bad guy of this piece, we're not sure. We think it's Stryker, right? Like a descendant of.
Yeah,
He's played by the lead from Narcos, of all things.
I've also heard rumors Omega Red is going to be in it.
Yeah.
A bunch of other stuff.
But I think people like it because it's an R-rated Wolverine movie and they've been wanting that. And it is sort of a serious-looking movie.
Is it the first R-rated Wolverine movie?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
The last time it was PG-13, they had an uncut version that added in some more violence.
Unrated. And Origins was rated C for crap.
I don't even talk about that one. That one's bad.
I am... You know, Wolverine to me is not one I particularly want to be in an R. He was able to chop up dudes just fine in the X-Men movies without me needing to see, like, blood spraying and stuff.
Yeah, but you know, Wolverine, like the Hulk, like the Punisher, and a lot of these guys, there are definitely a certain set of fans who, like, just want him to cut loose.
Right.
And I think those people are going to be very happy.
Wolverine makes one of them more sense to me as an R-rated than a lot of them.
It makes sense. I'm just saying that, like, he's gone most of his comic career, as many people as he's killed or whatever, they're not particularly gory about it.
Yeah.
It's like, they are not violence, you know, laden stories.
Did you read Barry Windsor Smith's Weapon X?
But it's not
PG-13.
That often,
it's PG-13,
exception.
Yeah.
Anyway, the most notable thing about the trailer probably is the smart use of Johnny Cash's cover of
Hurt? Yeah, it's Hurt
from Nine Inch Nails. Yeah.
Here's the thing, I feel like that song does a lot of the heavy lifting. Like without that song, that trailer's not as good.
I think that's probably true.
But that's just good music use.
I like the trailer because I wasn't... you could say the Guardians trailers might not have been as strong without their clever music use. They were
the Suicide Squad trailers. Yeah.
Okay, but there's a difference because the Suicide Squad trailer is for a weaker movie. The Guardians trailer is actually for a good movie.
But we're only talking about the trailers here, we don't yet know what the quality will be here.
The X-Men quality lately has not been good.
That's what the issue is, I think.
Who's the director?
It's Simon Mangrum or something?
I don't know. Is it anybody?
I forget. It is somebody.
It's somebody, but okay. I don't know what he's done.
In general, I'm not a big, like, Wolverine fan. I like Hugh Jackman's version. I like Wolverine okay.
Yeah.
I did not have any interest whatsoever in it, and I saw the trailer and I was like, huh, okay, maybe. So for me, that trailer did its work of getting me interested when I was not interested at all.
My interest level is the same as it was, which is if I hear it's good, I might see it.
Yeah.
Nick?
No, I'll probably see it.
All right. Speaking of the X-Men universe, there's two big developments, one in movies, one in comics. The biggest one is that Tim Miller is out on Deadpool 2.
Correct. Over
creative differences with Ryan Reynolds.
Which is weird.
And the thing is, Ryan Reynolds is the guy who we don't really know, but don't you feel like he's the guy who's been steering all this? Like, he did all the fan campaign stuff. He went on the Honest Trailers.
Think so.
I mean, I think he's taken an ownership of this character.
Yeah.
And I think if the director's trying to do one thing, then they really usually I will back a director over a random star.
Right.
But I think in this case, Ryan Reynolds is the guy you listen to.
Ryan Reynolds is maybe the living embodiment of Deadpool.
That's so sad.
I don't have a strong opinion on this one.
It is weird.
It was a big surprise. And then, of course, there was the fan petition to get Quentin Tarantino to direct Deadpool 2.
That's bizarre.
Which I'm happy that he will never do that, because there is nothing that would crush my soul more than Quentin Tarantino's one of his last movies to be fucking Deadpool 2.
What if he does do it, Randy?
No, I'll be sad.
There's no way he'll do it.
He's not going to do it.
It'll be announcement tomorrow. He has signed off.
Then you'll truly know he's sold out.
Yeah, but it'll be on LatinoReview.com, which they always just make stuff up.
Tarantino, the closest thing he's directed to a franchise movie would be, I guess, Jackie Brown.
Yeah.
In the sense that it wasn't a pre-existing
property. So it's based
property.
On something else, yeah.
If he were ever to touch Deadpool, it would be as a later on pastiche homage.
Yeah.
That's what he does.
Yeah, if Tarantino was to do a Marvel movie, what he needs to do is that 70s period movie we all want. Yep. Shang-Chi, he'd be great for Shang-Chi. Power Man and Iron Fist, sure. Moon Knight, I'd be down for Quentin Tarantino's Moon Knight.
Yeah.
But we're not going to – he's not going to do Deadpool 2. Come on, guys. Be realistic.
Yeah. I think for ego alone, he wouldn't take a sequel.
Yeah, no.
So the director walked off or is off the movie?
Yes.
But the movie's not like in limbo or anything. It's still going to happen.
No.
They just have to find a new director?
Yes.
Okay.
Or maybe not. Maybe
I have a feeling there may be enough momentum behind this, one of the highest grossing movies of all time, or whatever.
To land somebody good.
To land somebody, yeah.
Here's the question. Do you think that maybe Ryan Reynolds will just direct himself?
I
written, directed, and starring
That's
Ryan
possible.
Reynolds. He can go up against Ben Affleck's Batman.
Possible. I've heard of weirder things to happen.
But the other notable thing, there's this whole story that went around for a long time that Marvel was downplaying the X-Men in their comics because of the Fox movies.
Right.
And the Fantastic Four was canceled because of the Fox, because of Ike Perlman's feud with Fox or whatever else. And we don't know the full truth of it or not. I believe in general it's not true.
But we do know that there were certain things like some of the games and stuff. We know that like Fantastic Four expansions for like the Marvel Legendary game got canceled.
Yeah,
there's if for not fully true, there was some truth to it.
And there was, you know, for toys and licensing, like shirts and things like that, there were some weirdness.
Yep. Right. Well, and there are only like 4 X-Men series out right now, which for Marvel, I guess, is pretty deeply
right.
cut back.
If anything, it seems like what it amounted to is rather than like wiping out the X-Men line or whatever, they kind of it's a little quieter now.
Well, and also they decided to really push the Inhumans and see if they could get that to last.
They did, and since Fetch did not happen, by which I mean Inhumans, nobody cares about the Inhumans. And it's actually been excised from the film. It's not in the show anymore. I think they finally accepted. Like, it's still going. They're doing IVX, and they're doing Death of X and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But it seems very clear that they've decided this is not going to be their major tentpole. They are doing a new new initiative starting in, I think, early next year called Resurrection.
Yep.
But it's spelled weird with like
Resurrect.
It's like two X's.
It's like, and here's the other thing. It's also two S's. Like they misspelled the resurrect part of resurrection too. It's weirdly misspelled. At any rate, they have previously announced a few series. Cable's getting a series. Jean Grey is getting a series. Generation X, Iceman, and Weapon X. Which I don't know if that means Wolverine's coming back. Mm. But what's most notable, I think, here is that the two more titles are going to be X-Men Blue and X-Men Gold.
Right, an homage to the most popular, probably the highest selling time, certainly for the X-Men in the 90s,
yeah.
When they had two major teams and two separate comics.
I think this is really smart. I think, Dave, you and I were both sort of off at this point, but X-Men Blue and Gold is like, that's where a lot of people, that's where the nostalgia for X-Men starts
right.
Now
they, you know, a lot of times they use those things in name only. Like,
yeah.
We'll see if, I doubt they're going to particularly try and line up the teams with what they were in the 90s.
Oh, I don't think it matters. It just matters that there are two teams.
Right. Yeah, one of the things I like least about X-Men for the last, 10, 15 years is the sort of, I get that there's a lot of good characters, but there's they get diffused between all these different teams, and, you know, like, I'll see a team with, like, 3 characters I like on it and 2 I don't.
Right.
I would like them to return to, like 2 good teams filled with icons.
Yeah, me too.
I get that definitely you want like 1 or 2 unusual ones in there, kind of try them out. But I would like that to be predominantly the big guys.
Well, I'm excited. This is going to happen in spring of 2017. I'm excited to see what Marvel does sort of reshaking up the X-Books.
You know what's interesting? Yesterday, no less than two people in the store brought up in various ways a, I hear they're getting rid of the X-Books. Is that true? So clearly, it's almost as if that got renewed, and I wondered if maybe it was the Death of X comic going on right now.
Probably so.
Just basically, that was something to galvanize the kind of conspiracy theory stuff.
Yeah.
Like, oh my god, this is the end.
Yeah.
But no, it is actually, they're giving it a big push next year.
I'd be curious to see what they can do with a Jean Grey and a...
Is it just called Jean Grey?
It's called Jean Grey. We don't know if it's the current one or the other one coming back.
Okay.
Same with Weapon X. We don't really know the details.
No.
One more trailer. Red Dead Redemption 2 got a trailer. I still haven't watched it. Have you guys watched it?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much just like some sweeping shots.
People on horses.
And of course, the logo.
Right.
So, it doesn't tell us anything about the gameplay.
No. Not particularly, no. It's cool. It's got some energy to it. It's got some, you know, atmosphere. But it is just an atmospheric teaser.
Yeah.
I'm sure it might have, like, ties to the original Red Dead Revolver.
Yeah, which they're remastering for PS4. Yep. So, yeah, I'm excited about this game. So, we talked about that a little bit last week, I think.
Well,
yeah,
it's a great game.
The weird thing is, like, I'm semi-excited, but, like, I don't generally look forward these days to games that are big sandbox mega games.
Yeah. I have the same issue. I don't have time to go through a sandbox mega game.
Yeah.
But I did. Both of us really liked Grand Theft Auto V.
Yeah, it's true.
We didn't finish it.
No.
But Red Dead Redemption, you both finished.
Nope.
Really?
I did. Dave didn't.
Oh, okay. As I finished, I did finish
Red Dead Redemption, although I did not finish Undead Nightmare.
Well, I finished that too.
Yeah, those are expansions.
All right. Sad news about Steve Dillon.
Yeah, Steve Dillon, this was a way out of nowhere because he's young. He's in his 50s.
Yeah.
Best known for Preacher, but also like a quintessential, like just like one of the best storytellers in the business.
Yeah, and he's been on Punisher now for a while.
Right, he did tons with Punisher. He and Garth Ennis were there when they kind of brought it back with the Welcome Back Frank storyline. Yeah.
He also did a bunch of Hellblazer with Garth Ennis.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dillon's a sort of a legend and we all thought he had many, many years. Yeah. We don't know exactly what happened.
Right. I think I heard, but, you know, like, I didn't see enough to get confirmation. There was definitely a lot of not saying what he had died of.
Yeah.
But the thing I heard somewhere was that he had an appendix burst, having maybe held off and going to get medical treatment, thinking it was food poisoning,
mm-hmm.
Which is a pretty scary thing. And I guess it's a reminder to go to the doctor no matter what you have.
Yeah, if you feel sick, go to the doctor.
Yeah.
Also, if you haven't read Preacher, I recommend reading Preacher.
Yeah, it's probably a good time. Preacher TV show. You can tribute the mighty Steve Dillon. You know, he was on right now, was doing the current Punisher, but also did a really good issue of Scarlet Witch.
That's right.
So
yeah, he was a working artist. Like, this was a shock.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a rough year.
Yeah. It's somehow sadly fits, but. We need to get out of 2016 as fast as we can.
Yeah,
basically at this point.
Finally, The Walking Dead returned on Sunday.
Yes.
What did you guys think?
My favorite part was when I haven't been watching it in like 3 years or
That's
so.
That's my favorite part as well, Nick. Yeah.
No, I haven't watched it since season two.
Which All is right. not to disparage those who are fans.
No,
we fell off, and I think people who watched it. Saw some of why we, you know, I know there were people who were excited by the big reveal and the grisliness and the sadism of Negan and all that, but I think a lot of people were like, if they're going to kill these guys off, then what's the point? It's sort of devolving into misery porn.
But Dave rightly pointed out before we did the podcast this week that we should at least address it, or someone would be like, "Hey, you guys didn't die on Walking Dead."
Yes,
we did. We talked about it. None of us have been watching it.
Sorry. I watched the violent scenes on YouTube, and I was like, "Yeah, that's pretty violent. That's pretty horrific."
I like Jeffrey Dean Morgan. I really do.
Yeah, me too.
Have an interest in seeing him play Negan.
I just don't have time for more TV. If I heard it was like the best show on TV. I still wouldn't have time for it. I've got too much to watch. So,
you're just racist against zombies.
I am. I am an anti-zombite. We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, October 26th. And I'm going to start off this week.
No.
Yep.
No.
Yep.
Okay.
I
wanted to take a stand, but then I decided to back down.
My pick is actually once again Miss Marvel. Number 12, which has one of those number one now things, which are really confusing people.
So if you haven't seen this, it's a branding to show their new storylines with the Marvel Now initiative. But so it's like issue, what did you say it was, 14?
It's number 12. 12.
But what your eyes will be drawn to the giant number one on the cover.
Yeah.
As is intended.
Yeah.
But then people who are reading it, I've had many people saying, oh, what, they're relaunching it already?
Yeah.
And then that kind of falls into that jaded, oh, God, another reboot? Like, no, these are just new storylines.
And that's what they were trying to avoid. I think they wanted to get the bump from the reboot, but they didn't want to actually do the reboot. And
We here in the comic shop world, we're on the front lines of this, and we just have to, like, tell every single person who's confused by it, no, it's okay. It's just a new storyline, story arc.
At any rate, this actually is just a one-shot story where Kamala goes back to Pakistan for a month.
Uh-huh.
She's had a bit of a tough time with civil war. She's lost a friend. And as a result, she decides to, like, go back and visit family in Pakistan because she has dual citizenship.
Did she go, like, by herself?
Yeah.
She can't just do that. How'd she get there?
She goes on a plane, Dave.
Okay. Does she have money and stuff?
Her parents are sending her.
Oh, okay.
She has family. Oh, okay. So they're like, she's sending her to stay. They're staying her to stay with their family.
I wasn't sure if she was kind of doing this independent of the family.
Stuff. No. They're family sending her because they've got all this family back in Pakistan.
Yep.
And the artist is a new name to me. Mirka Andolfo, I believe, is the name. Okay. And I don't know the name, but the art is fantastic.
Yeah, I'm looking over your shoulder, and that is interesting. It doesn't quite look like anything I've seen before from the book. It has that sort of watercolor, almost European look a little bit.
It's got really nice colors.
But it also doesn't look like some shocking break from the book.
No, at first I thought it was the usual artist.
It kind of looks like Takeshi Miyazawa.
Yeah. It's definitely
nice looking.
But Ian Herring is the color artist. And yeah, Dave Wright, it has sort of a painted look to it. And she goes to Pakistan and stays with her family. There's an interesting thing where she talks about they're in this building that she says she hasn't been in since she was 9 or 10. And I guess her grandfather and grandmother moved into the top floor of this building as newlyweds. Then as they had kids and their kids got married, they bought the apartment under that one and the one under that until eventually the whole building is crammed with their relatives. So it's like a whole building
for
relatives. And I'm like, that's really interesting. I don't know if that's actually something that happens. But it's kind of a neat little idea that she's sort of in this hotel for her family, basically.
That is interesting. I was thinking that an issue set entirely in Pakistan would be more like – would seem like the most culturally unique issue of the series to date.
It's not that alien is the word. It's very much like she's just visiting family because we've already been in her world.
Right.
And all the languages translate. They don't do the whole thing.
Sure.
But she talks a little bit about going back to prayer, going to ride boat horses on the beach, and
this is sort of a finding herself issue.
Yeah, she's not going to be Miss Marvel, but there's some stuff going on. There's water bandits who are blowing up the water supply and then delivering water and charging for it. Mm-hmm. Sort of a protection scam thing going on.
This essentially sounds like a potential real problem.
I'm sure it is.
Not just a superhero-y kind of thing.
And so she sort of makes some makeshift costumes, and she deliberately did not bring her own, at which point she runs into an actual vigilante in that country. Like they're one of their.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's a fun little thing. And it's, again, it's a kind of a quick story. It's just a story of her sort of finding herself, taking a break. But it's a really good story. It's very much in the same vein as everything I've loved about Miss Marvel. And it's the introduction of another new exciting artist. So definitely worth a look, whether you've been a Miss Marvel fan or whether you've just been curious about checking it out. Dave, what's your pick?
My pick is the first issue of the ongoing? Is it ongoing?
No, it's a miniseries.
Of the new miniseries, new Serenity miniseries. That is Serenity as in Firefly.
Yep.
They've probably done at least like roughly a half a dozen or so previous ones or graphic novels with Serenity.
Yeah.
And this one is notable for taking place after the movie. We realized while we were looking at this that there had been one previous one,
Leaves on the Wind,
post movie, that somehow none of us got around to reading. Otherwise, usually there's at least somebody in here who's read it, but we hadn't read that one. This only lightly touches on that, and it's not important that you have read it.
Well, and in fact, they have an opening sequence that explains what happened in the previous series.
It's a good first issue that, and in many ways, it feels almost like coming home. You know, in the sense that they're back out there. They're taking jobs to stay afloat. You know, Zoe has a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. What were the other big status quo changes?
River's new pilot.
River's the new pilot.
The new pilot.
Mal and Inara are together. River and Simon are together.
Right, and that's the sort of big stuff.
Also, there's no Wash.
And there's no Wash.
And no Shepard.
Well, I guess we'll find out why he's not there later.
Yeah, they didn't mention it in here. I'm sure there's something.
We'll look into it. Yeah. We'll wiki it.
Yeah.
It seems like, you know, and they mentioned of course the big thing where they revealed to the world the secret of the Reavers.
Right.
Oh, and the one thing I do remember from the previous series, the thing that rang very true is that in the opening of that, you found out that the government, like, kind of like, I think they, like, they didn't, like, flood the airways. I think they basically said they denied.
They denied it. Yeah.
They said that, you know, there's no, the proof is not good, that this was all faked footage and
it
stuff
was
like that.
Rigged, Dave. It was the Cortex was rigged.
It was rigged. They are Reaver truthers.
Yes.
And they basically, I think, pushed the backlash off of them. Not completely, but like a lot of it.
Yeah.
And well, I was
Sarah
like, man,
Paulson's
that
was a big liar. So
that's actually true.
Rang quite true. Let's see. Well,
Sarah Paulson does play a lawyer in People vs. O.J. Simpson. And as we know, all lawyers are liars.
It's true.
Sorry, lawyers. I'm just kidding.
In a lot of ways, this is a big sort of catch-up issue. You're seeing what's going on with everyone. I don't want to reveal too much. You know, some interesting tensions have formed between some people, as well as, Mal and Inara actually seem to be doing okay.
Yeah.
They're doing all right. She's a little more casual in this, but I thought was interesting. This is a small thing, but instead of kind of the... Because she's not a companion anymore.
But it's a continuation of her character. It feels organic.
Yep. And the story that sort of kicks off has to do with someone else like River.
Yeah.
Who I guess had been in the previous story. And also there's a sort of like a what's it? There's sort of a terrorist group called the Peacemakers, and they're the brown coats that were even more extreme than Mal.
Yeah,
Mal was pissed after he lost the war, but these guys have been still fighting and doing terrorist stuff.
You know what though? The interesting thing is when they talk about him, Mal's like he's like I wasn't part of them, but at least they did something. He was he's still sort of sympathetic to them.
Yep. And it's clear that they're going to play a major role in it, as is they're having to look back in on this girl who, seems to have River-level abilities. But, you know, a lot of it, like Serenity at its best, you could tell me the raw plot to a random issue of Firefly or episode of Firefly, and I'd be like, oh, that sounds fine.
Yeah.
But really, what makes the series is the kind of the wit, the character interplay, and all of that.
Yep.
And I feel like they've got a pretty good job of that going on here.
Yeah,
this is
Chris Roberson writing.
Chris Roberson, who's best known for what's he best known for?
Cinderella, Fable Town.
Yeah. I feel like he's got a good handle on the characters. They all felt in character to me. Nobody ever did that thing that sometimes just happens in these licensed comics where they say something and I'm like, that just rings utterly false.
Yeah.
So I liked revisiting the characters. I was not wild about the art from Georges Janty, however you say his name.
No, it tells a story well enough, but I wish he was a little flashier.
Yeah, or he's also like not quite. He's not great with the caricatures, with capturing their likenesses rather. And he's also not terrible or anything like that. But I might have preferred somebody who is either a little more stylized. So you know, you get that stylized, almost like just as a random example, like J. Scott Campbell kind of does a little bit of caricaturish art at times. And I could see him pulling that off.
Or the bare midriffs.
Or an artist who is simply kind of a little bit more photo referency.
Yeah.
I remember on one of the free comic book days, it was Gabriel Ba or Fabio Moon.
Yeah.
Artwork.
Yeah.
And I actually wasn't sure. How did that work out?
I liked that a lot,
it was
actually.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, you know, if you're a Firefly fan, your chances are this was either already on your radar or not, but I'm giving it the recommendation.
Yep.
Nick, what you got?
What are you guys choosing for me this week? Because I know you chose stuff for me.
Right. We got one of them. We got one wrong.
Yeah, we got one wrong.
Yeah, but no, Randy, I focus on we got one right.
You get Batman right. No, yeah. This week I actually want to choose the second issue of Frank Cho's Skyborn. The first issue is very much sort of this action piece, kind of just one-off. The second issue is definitely more of an exploration of the world. It's a more exploration of the organization that is sort of... collecting and categorizing mystical artifacts and creatures. Mm-hmm. There's some cool stuff, kind of not like Buffy level area of when they did
why people have powers or something in this
show. Yeah, the main protagonist.
The descendants of the gods or something?
No, we actually meet the main protagonist, and his name is Thomas. He's one of the descendants of Lazarus.
Okay, so that's right.
He's immortal, he can't die, he's super strong.
He got Bible superpowers.
Yes, but Thomas basically gave up the life. He tried to commit suicide, he's in a bad place, and he joined a, you know, monastery where he's lived for the last 30 years.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, he's brought back into this craziness. Big stuff is afoot. There's kind of that kind of James Bond, sort of the newer Bond movies, kind of that element of coming back to the life of, of a spy. And you get to meet some of his old friends. His old butler is kind of a really cool character, not unlike a Jarvis-type character. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's just some really cool stuff here. You see a Minotaur, and we also get to meet the big antagonist.
Is this comparable in sort of overall approach to like any certain movie or TV show? Is it like it sounded a little BPRD-ish when I was hearing it?
It's a little BPRD. I actually like the notion of the sort of government organization that they're working for, because it was originally part of the Vatican. And that was who was in control, and slowly and surely, companies and other CEOs have sort of bought it out in a lot of ways.
Right.
And they're more in control. So it's just got some cool elements and fun stuff. There are some big things I'm not going to mention that happen. It's just a lot of fun.
It sounds like like a pretty cool premise and hook to it.
Yeah, I could easily see this being like a TNT or USA television show.
Now, is he the main character? Who's the girl in it who I saw more of in the first issue?
That is his sister.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are they sort of co-leads, or is he sort of the lead?
No, he's the lead.
Okay. Is she going to be in it again?
I'm not going to say.
Okay.
And there is another sibling that we haven't met.
There's a guy riding a little donkey in the front on the first page.
The guy on the donkey owns a guy on a donkey.
It's like tiny donkey. Okay.
It reminds me a lot of the opening to Hudson Hawk. But yes, that is my first pick.
All right, what's your backup pick?
My backup pick is Teen Titans. I loved the Rebirth issue, mainly I think because I like Damian Wayne.
Yeah.
I like the little jerk. He's fun. And the notion of him, forming a Teen Titans team by abducting them was kind of fun.
Yep.
And this is sort of more
of that. It does seem like how he'd go about it. He wouldn't have like a, hey, let's sit down, I'll try and win you over to my idea.
No, because that's not him.
No, that's the best idea that was in Rebirth, was him kidnapping the team members.
Yeah, and this one we actually get to see his 13th birthday, where sort of you're kind of in the, you're not adult, but you're not a kid, and he's kind of, there's that angle. And there's also sort of the antagonist to this is Ra's al Ghul. And that's what he's trying to form a team to fight Ra's al Ghul, his grandfather.
Yeah.
And there's just some cool stuff. There's interplay between all the characters, and seeing Damian kind of bounce off of like Beast Boy and sort of point out their faults and point out their pros and cons is fun. And I feel like this is Benjamin Percy, who's been writing Green Arrow.
Yep.
His voices for these characters ring true to me. I actually really enjoy his Starfire, because she feels more confident and kind of keying off of the Tamaranian slave, but kind of down to earth, not super kiddy or anything. Like, when she was writing in the previous...
I wasn't sure if they were... What direction they were going with.
Well, in the previous New 52, she was kind of aloof in, like, the Florida Keys.
And, right. She was kind of like the nice, naive girl. Yeah. It was a little bit how they portrayed her.
But I feel like they're all getting their due here, and he's doing a great job. I don't know this artist by name. I can't even say his last name. Charlapidus?
Sure.
I really like his sort of animated style. Cartoon style, it works. So, no, I think it's a great issue, and I'm looking forward to seeing more. Dave, what is your secondary pick?
The secondary pick is the second issue of what had been sellout, although we got a new reprinted, of the new Image series, 7 to Eternity. I feel like more people asked about the poster we had for that on the door than almost anything else lately. This is Rick Remender's fantasy kind of strange fantasy, dark fantasy comic, and although it's nothing like the world of Game of Thrones, it has something of that seriousness to it. And I like the first issue, and I'm liking the second issue too. So far so good. Has really nice art from Jerome Opeña, I guess.
Yeah,
looks like it's got the little swirly thing over it. You know, in the first issue, the family of the father of the lead character was killed by this. What seems like sort of a god who walks on Earth, the sometimes called the Mud King, also the God of Whispers. It's like Tolkien; everything's got a few names.
Yeah,
I guess Game of Thrones too. In this issue, you see that he has gone because his family has been essentially permanently on the run in this world, and he's decided to go to the God of Whispers. And actually hear his appeal. And that's more than just going to see what his offer is, although that's how they describe it. It sounds like here, like, it would be like going to potentially make a deal with the devil, mm-hmm. and even asking what his offer is could be like super dangerous and might be what dooms you.
It's like going to ask a favor from Sauron.
Exactly. You know, there's
hey, almost... Sauron, can I borrow a cup of sugar?
yes, Randy, you can.
So, but much of this issue is actually a flashback to when he was a kid and his father, who we saw die in the first issue, was kind of trying to teach him to harden him to the world. And you see him out on it with his father on like a trip to pick up supplies. And already their name is something that he's like not allowed to tell people their name because it's essentially like a curse. And you actually find out in the course of this where the God of Whispers came from. And it doesn't seem like he's really a god per se, but more somebody with humbler beginnings who rose to great, great power. There's definitely magical abilities and things like that. But this is, I'm going to say this is the secret origin of the bad guy issue. That's at its heart. It is a dark issue. You also do see the sequence where he goes to hear the offer. The bad guy, he's got kind of his own sly plan, and the bad guy is sly enough to have seen through it and to have sort of an alternate offer that's a better one than he expected, and to actually throw him off his guard. So there's some cool surprises going on. There's also a big ol' action sequence, and I don't want to talk about it too much, but it's a big ol' violent action sequence in the end. Suffice to say, if you enjoyed the first issue, and it seems like a lot of people really did, I would recommend just keep it going with this. It's if you missed the first issue, the second printing of it is hitting on the same day, so you could pick up both issues at once if you were of a mind.
I like to see that they're still doing the playlists in the back.
Rick Remender posts his sort of thematic playlist, I guess, for the issue, the stuff he was listening to while he was writing it. It's always kind of cool when people do that. He's got such hipster musical taste, though. I want to hate him, but I like
some of those are good.
but I like his book. Actually, yeah, most of it's not. I don't even like know him well enough to like say I hate this band. I'm just like these guys are too cool for me.
Randy, what is your pick?
My pick is a comic from the publisher Black Mask. It's a new first issue called The Skeptics. It is
Mask has made our list before.
Yes, it's written by Teenie Howard, pencils inks by Devaki Niyogi.
Okay,
Niyogi is an artist I've not seen before. It's a new artist, but has sort of a Mike Allred meets like Frank Quitely a little bit, and it's also got a little Paul Pope in there with some of the.
It's not quite as like kind of like retro, kind of like goofy as Mike Allred, but it does have a little bit of that sort of clean line look of like sort of a Silver Age comic a little bit,
but
a little grittier.
Yeah, well, this is about a story of a. A pair of, it looks like, psychics, a British dude and a young black woman in what is essentially a alternate universe 60s. They're going into a government agency to sort of display their psychic powers along with their psychiatrist, who's like their handler. And they're basically proving that they can bend spoons and see pictures in a different room, this kind of stuff. And they get to meet the president, who's like, oh, we found out the Russians have these psychic weapons, and we've been working on this. The big twist in the middle, and it's worth mentioning, is that they don't have any psychic powers. They're con men, And this is all part of the psychiatrist trying to convince the government that the Russians also do not have psychic powers. This is a propaganda campaign the U.S. has fallen for. that's sort of the basis of the series, and it's sort of these two people getting it over their head as they get believed way too quickly that they have these psychic powers, and their psychiatrist trying to calm them down, and then there's a hint that they may actually be meeting their Russian counterparts, and that there may not be as much of a fraud as they thought on the Russian side. It's a really good first issue. It's clever and fun.
Yeah, that is an interesting concept.
Yeah.
Because I know that, you know, there always has been sort of, especially in the pop culture, but they did do experiments with trying to find psychics. I know that in Russia, that was kind of a big thing. I don't know if that was like 50s, 60s.
Yeah, it's in that vein.
And, you know, it's certainly entered into the, you know, like conspiracy culture. But yeah, I'm kind of amused by the notion of that this secret world where there's shadow wars going on, everybody's a fake. Oh wait, but what if they're not?
Yeah, it's really good.
Line to skirt.
Yeah, it's really good, and their lead characters, both their psychics and the psychiatrist is the lead, are all really likable, interesting characters. So definitely worth a look. Also on my list this week, Saga number 39, which continues to be good. Prowler number 1, which ties into the clone conspiracy. Nighthawk number 6, which wraps up that series I've been really enjoying. Bloodshot USA number 1, which sees a Bloodshot plague released on New York City by Project Rising Spirit, so that Bloodshot and his allies have to basically deal with a New York torn apart by people who have immense healing powers and have gone kind of crazy.
People know Bloodshot's Valiant, right?
Yeah. Generation Zero, which is a sort of a weird flashback where they're all trapped in their heads and experiencing an Archie-style story. Lake of Fire number 3, which is an Image book that I'm really digging, which I've been pitching as sort of Knights versus Aliens. This has such good character work in it, such good artwork, and I'm really, really enjoying it. I can't wait till they do a trade. I think it's one that will sell to a lot of people just the same way like Birthright and some of those did.
Yep.
And then I wanted to mention two trades. One is the Black Widow Volume 1 trade, which is the Wade Samney stuff, which is just a great spy action book. It seems like it's taken them a while to get this into a trade, but I'm glad they did. And as you guys know, we're all big fans of their Daredevil run. This looks like another fun series. And then the Mobius Library from Dark Horse starts. This is Mobius, the European cartoonist, who has been out of print for the most part. Like finding his stuff is always like, it's always super expensive. Yeah. It's always sort of scattershot.
He's like the Kirby of like France and Europe in general. But it's finding reprints stateside is a little difficult.
And this one is $50, but it is a giant oversized hardcover of sort of his early stuff about the mythical paradise planet Edina. So if you're looking for an artist who is definitely formative to a lot of people and beloved in the comics community, this is a chance to get on board his stuff. Dave, what else is on your list?
Let's see. Did you mention?
Nope.
All right. So somewhat notable, Civil War II, number 6. As always, some fairly big events are afoot and going on in here. That is out. There is a Call of Duty miniseries called Call of Duty Zombies.
Yep.
I think I know what happens in this, but yep. I have not read it yet. There's Wonder Woman 75th Anniversary Special with all kinds of awesome artists on it, and it's a big old sort of oversized issue. And did you mention this? Randy, there's also Doctor Strange and the Sorcerers Supreme.
Which I know Nick liked and considered for pick.
I did.
Yeah, Nick, you tell me, because I have it on my list to read.
Well, I think it's just a cool concept. It's basically Merlin running back and forth through time, collecting various Sorcerers Supremes at different times in their lives to fight a evil bad.
And there's a miniseries?
No, it's a new ongoing.
I think it's by Robbie Thompson.
I assume one of those people he grabs is Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange.
That's why it's called Doctor Strange and the Sorcerer Supreme.
Yeah, just checking. But like Merlin is like the guy. I thought that meant that Doctor Strange would be rounding him up, but apparently it's Merlin.
Doctor Strange is kind of low power magic right now.
Yeah, but he's grabbing people like who shows up?
Well, he grabs the next Sorcerer Supreme, which I liked.
Yeah, that one.
The Ancient One, and then he grabs another character we've never seen before, who I really liked. Basically, this is Robbie Thompson creating a few different sorcerers characters. I missed the crazy ones from Aaron's run. Like, I was really hoping those guys were going to be in this.
Yeah, that'd be nice. But
But
they
this
are Sorcerer Supreme.
This is a good tour to gathering the team issue, and it has art by Javier Rodriguez, who is doing Spider-Woman, who is really, really good.
It's beautiful.
It's it feels like something tricky to do because it's one thing to have cool magic users, but Sorcerer Supreme tend to be old sage-like people, and it's tough to have a room full of five Merlin types. Sounds dangerous.
They're not
because he's grabbing them from different times in their runs. So he's not getting them at their old periods.
Right.
Some are young, some are old, some are just crazy.
Yep.
I really enjoyed that. Was that everything?
That's
you had?
It for me.
Okay. I just had a few more to add. So the fourth issue of Titans, which sees Abracadabra continue to run amok. The second issue of Frostbite, Joshua Williamson's Vertigo book. The first issue of Batman Beyond. And then...
Did Batman Beyond get a rebirth special?
Yes
it did. Okay. This is the actual first issue.
Right.
And then there's a new story arc starting in Detective Comics. And I have to say it's a really good start, delving into sort of more of the relationship between Kate Kane and Bruce Wayne, seeing them sort of deal with the fallout of a lot of stuff and Night of the Monster Men.
Still a team book, like it
there
was before.
It's still a team book. They're dealing with a loss. Also, Renee Montoya shows back up, and it's a cool scene between the two characters. And new villains show up. So I thought it was an impressive issue.
All right. We'll see about that.
All right. That wraps it up for us this week. We'll be back with talk about that. We'll be back to talk about TV and some movies in just a minute. Okay, so Dave, I know that Halloween is your time to watch horror movies sometimes. Yep. You watch a new movie.
I've seen all the horror movies.
Yes. Tell us about all the horror movies. Start it alphabetically.
And American Psycho.
Okay. And Arachnophobia.
I've seen a few things lately, but nothing of huge note, although everybody should watch the Ghost Watch if they can find a copy of it. the movie I was going to talk about was a new one, the sequel to the Ouija movie from a few years ago, which was known to be a crap-ass kind of teen horror movie.
It was awful.
Yeah, it was really very bad, even if you kind of expected it to be, which I did. It was pretty bad.
So this is Ouija 2?
It's called Ouija Origin of Evil. It is a prequel of sorts. Effectively, it stands on its own, though. I forget who directed it. Nick, I don't know if it's... I feel like it's somebody who has directed something notable. If you have a chance to look it up while I'm jabbering.
Sure.
But it's... Although PG-13, it is... It felt like an R movie.
Say Ouija 13.
Oh, my God.
I mean, sort of in the same, like, Final Destination violence problem?
I would actually say it is kind of in the style of a James Wan horror movie, which is to say it is actually quite smartly written. I was surprised and a little bit shocked.
Wow, I just clicked on Rotten Tomatoes because that's where I go for all this, and it's at, like, 80%. That's pretty solid for a horror movie.
Yeah, horror movies do not usually trend well there. The basic premise of it is that this mom who's kind of a... she's like a spiritualist, a tarot card reader, a seance lady, and she's a fraud. She kind of does it not really cruelly, but to kind of give people closure with relatives and stuff like that. And her two younger daughters are in on it, one who's like in high school and one who's the creepy younger girl. And they're in on it. And this is right when the Ouija board comes out as like the Parker Brothers or Hasbro toy novelty thing that it is. They decide to throw it into the mix to kind of spice things up, bring the business up. And as you can guess, things do not go well. What's interesting is that at no point was the kind of the progression of creepy stuff predictable. Things happen in weird ways. There's an interest. The characters are very well developed, there's a priest in it who was decidedly good, who's played by none other than the kid who played Elliot in E.T.
Oh wow!
Oh really?
Yeah. My brother caught his name in the credits, and then I was like, "Oh shit! Yeah, that was him." I realized the face matched what I remembered of him. And he's great in it. He's fantastic as a priest who's kind of getting over. at least a few years past the death of his wife, but as he's helping this family out, he's clearly got a little bit of a thing for the mom, who, you know, he doesn't want to step on his vows, but they have a thing going on.
Henry Thomas,
yeah,
ET kid.
Yeah, you may also remember him from Cloak and Dagger.
Oh wow, I remember Cloak and Dagger.
The director of this, by the way, is Mike Flanagan, who is an indie director. He did things like Oculus, the horror movie.
Right.
He also did the movie I talked about like a few months ago, Hush, that was on Netflix about
the person who's the deaf.
Yes.
Deaf girl. Who's,
so he definitely. Yep. Approaches movies differently.
Yeah, and Oculus, I was by no means in love with that movie. I thought it was a good, solid outing.
It was
but
solid.
This is much better than that. I feel like this had a lot more jump scares than I'd seen in a long time. Like by the end, my nerves were like really on edge.
Jump scares can turn cheap though pretty quickly.
Right. Now here's the thing. I feel like the movie earned it because it also was smart.
Okay.
So I would compare it more. That's why I mentioned James Wan's movie. So yeah. And then for those who don't immediately know what his horror movies are, that would be
Conjuring, Conjuring 2,
Conjuring series, and
Sinister.
No, not Sinister.
Saw.
No. Oh, yeah, he did do Saw, but what's the other? Insidious.
Insidious.
That's his big sort of trilogy of movies. I don't think he directed the second one, but he produced it. And then he came back, I think, and directed the third one, if I'm not mistaken. So. Anyway, but it's quality horror. Much darker than I expected it to be.
I completely forgot. I did see the trailer for this, and it did look really creepy.
Yeah, there is some extremely unnerving scenes in this. There is a little sequence in there.
A little girl being kind of
right. She's the one who starts like
messing with the Ouija board.
Messing with it, and is like doing that. You know, they have the thing where you're never supposed to play it alone.
Right.
She of course does that.
Yeah.
Because she wants to try and contact her dead father. That's been a point of like a plot point in the story, and things get weird.
It's kind of cool that somebody has like rescued this series from. Because that first one was
awful. I have not seen a turnaround this big since Star Trek the Motion Picture to Wrath of Khan.
Wow.
So
you're saying this is the Wrath of Khan of Ouija board movies.
Yes, I am. And
bold statement.
Witch Board starring Tawny Kitaen is the Star Trek Insurrection.
Damn you, I was going to make a witch board joke and you stole it.
Sorry. this is my house.
There
is a sequence that they show a little bit of in one of the trailers where the boyfriend of the older sister in this, he's leaving the house. You know, he's like been upstairs in her room and they kissed for the first time and stuff. And he's leaving and the little girl, she's like, can I ask you something? And he's like, yeah. And she's like, do you know what it feels like to be strangled? And it's an unnerving line in and of itself.
I mean, kids are always coming up.
But what follows in the movie is even more unnerving. I don't want to quite say what occurs, but there's a sort of discussion from her that's really creepy. But anyway, yeah, non-traditional horror movie that is definitely worth a look.
You know, that is the first question we ask in every job interview. We just want to know.
You know, sometimes I ask if they've worked in retail before.
Oh, do you start with that?
Yeah, yeah. You want to, like, you don't want it to be ready for it.
Right, yeah.
what else we got?
All right, so, Nick, you and I have been watching a show, Timeless.
Yeah.
How far are you into this?
I'm only two episodes in.
Okay, and I think I've seen the third. Timeless it's by Sean Ryan and Eric Kripke. That's The Shield and Supernatural.
Yep.
And it's got Abigail Spencer is one of the leads, and she is from Rectify. She's great in that show.
Yeah.
And it's got the pilot whose name – I don't remember the actor's name, but he played Lem on Better Off Ted.
Yeah.
And he's probably my favorite part about the show.
He's great.
But basically the pitch of this is that the government has a secret – or not the government. It's a
– It's like a private or
– It's like an
company.
Elon Musk type basically.
Yeah. And they developed time travel.
They have developed time travel. And it opens with a terrorist played by Goran Vishnik from ER.
Yep.
Kidnapping one of the two pilots, played by Matt Frewer, and they take him in this
Max Headroom.
Max Headroom.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
They take him in a time machine. They vanish, and
they're able to sort of follow.
Yeah, Homeland Security gets involved, and they recruit Abigail Spencer's character, who's a historian, to sort of be the expert. They've got a military guy, And then they've got their pilot, who is the other, the only guy who can pilot. The implication being that it takes like years to learn how to pilot these things. So there's only two pilots. This pilot has to be black. And he tells the Foundation head, he's like, look, I'm not time traveling. There is nowhere I can go that's going to be good for me. And he's like, you have to go. You're the only pilot. So they've got what they call the lifeboat. In it can it was basically created as a rescue ship in case the time travel ship got lost. So it can track where the other time travel ship goes. It knows where it goes. It knows when it goes, but they don't know where. So they have to go back and sort of guess at what this guy's trying to do. And the implication seems to be that he's trying to change history.
His end goal is.
But he's like, the first episode is they're trying to stop. They go back and the Hindenburg, basically they stop it. He stops it crashing. But it seems to be in order to have it crash on the way on its return journey when it's got more important dignitaries aboard. So he wants to sort of make bigger shakeups in time. Like, and in the second episode when they go after it, they try to save Abraham Lincoln. They're not trying to save him. They're trying to make sure that it goes off as it's supposed to. But in addition to killing Abraham Lincoln, he's got these collaborators, and they're going to also kill like the Secretary of State and the Vice President and anyone who might step in to sort of cause a bigger disruption.
Right.
I feel like the second episode is a better outing.
It is.
The first one has a lot of setup and a lot of to accomplish.
Yeah.
And it moves a little quicker than I would have liked.
Yeah.
The second episode, I feel like there's a little more cohesion to it. And,
yeah.
I'm actually liking the villain, or I put villain in quotation marks.
Yeah, we're not sure.
Because I'm not sure.
Because, yeah, he actually, at the end of the first episode, comes to her and is like, presents her with a journal that's in her handwriting. And the implication is that a future version of her is actually working with them.
So,
interesting. This sounds to me like a total ripoff of Legends of Tomorrow.
Except it's way better than Legends of Tomorrow.
Now, here's a question. So each week so far, each episode has been some different time period.
It's a time travel of the week, but
and how do they handle the budget?
It's pretty good, actually. Yeah, it looks pretty great.
Yeah,
that sounds like a difficult thing to do on
Hindenburg. I mean, they accomplished that. It showed a lot.
The Hindenburg looked great. The flashbacks to the Civil War Reconstruction era,
yeah,
really nice. And then the next week they do Atomic City, which is 60s Las Vegas.
Oh, that's cool.
They do a really good job. The other thing that's interesting about this is that. Yeah, it's mostly a time travel of the week episode, but the overarching story is the historian, her mom had just recently died of cancer, and she and her sister were sort of trying to get her life back on track. Well, when she comes back after having stopped the Hindenburg disaster, but not entirely, like it happened, but they're like, they've inserted themselves into history. Like, there's mysterious people who stopped the saboteurs, but then were never seen again, and it's them. Mm-hmm. They come back, and they remember the history that was. And the people who are running the time travel, they're like, they remember the history that is now.
Mm-hmm.
But she goes back home and discovers that her mother is alive, but she's never had a sister.
Huh.
And so there's like this whole, her timeline has changed. And she's got a fiance now who she's never met.
Okay.
And so they're doing these things where like the slight changes in time they're making are affecting them. Yeah. And it's wrapping time around them. And that's the interesting stuff to me is like, what exactly is going on there? And what exactly is this guy trying to accomplish? And is she going to be worried? There's a mysterious thing called Rittenhouse, which seems to be sort of an agency that the terrorists are trying to stop that may have something to do with the agency they're working with. And there's definitely a deeper story to be developed here. And Kripke's been on record as saying, look, I don't do long stories where I don't reveal stuff. You've seen Supernatural. Like you guys are going to know early on what's going on.
I was gonna say, that first up. I still think the pilot of Supernatural is one of the better pilots.
It's a great pilot.
Yeah, right? And it answered a lot of questions and threw out a lot of questions, too. So
I'm trying to remember exactly what the threat was in the first episode of Supernatural.
Well, though. It was sort of getting the band back together, because, I mean...
Right, but we knew that they had in the past already done hunting.
And it was the sort of the man with the yellow eyes.
Okay, that's what I didn't remember. Yeah, but yeah.
Is it Adrian Palicki?
Yep, Adrian Palicki as his girlfriend.
Yep.
Yeah, it's this is a fun show, and I wasn't sure. I still wanted to be a little more serious, but its lightweight approach actually kind of works for me.
Man, fall TV, network television, it's still kind of... It's
been pretty good.
I have to say, it's not on our list, but I have to throw a shout-out to The Exorcist.
Oh, I need to catch up on that.
Man, it's doing some awesome stuff, especially in this last episode. They did a huge reveal.
Yeah, Nick told me about it. I decided, even though I'm behind and... I do want to catch up on this one. It sounds like it's got enough for me to catch up with. The reveal was a pretty cool concept.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need to catch up on that one. The other show that I've been watching is Black Mirror had its third season come out on Netflix.
No, I have not watched any of these yet.
Six episodes. The previous show is only seven episodes. It's a three-episode first season, three-episode second season, and then special. A Christmas special. And this is sort of a...
Those Brits and their Christmas specials.
It is sort of a technological Twilight Zone, basically, where it looks at a future, sort of slightly different future. Each episode is different, but it explores sort of social media and...
Emerging technologies.
Mm-hmm. And this is Netflix basically doing a new take on it. They're doing another season. It has a bigger budget. It has no time constraints on it because it's Netflix. And Charlie Brooker, the writer, is working with a lot of big-name talent like Mike Schur from The Office and Rashida Jones and I forget who all else, but a bunch of big names. And unfortunately, it's not as good. I've seen five of the six. Mm-hmm. I think there's one pretty good one and a bunch of kind of disappointing ones.
Yeah, it's too bad. Might have been something that worked best as a short, punchy series.
I think it needed an editor, and I think it needed to be a lot tighter. And I think, yeah, their concepts are not as strong as they think they are.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time they get to the twist, either you've already figured it out or you're so uninterested in the world that it doesn't have the punch that the old ones used to.
Now, I would say that, like, the previous ones, I can only think of one or two that actually had what I would call a twist. Mostly, it was interesting to see where they were going with it. But I wasn't, like, confused, and they didn't throw some game-changing...
I was completely engaged, though, in most of the episodes. I feel like there was only one or two that I was kind of just like, meh, it's okay.
Yeah, that's what it is. The engagement's not there. I feel like, and don't get me wrong, I liked all of them, and maybe on later watchings I'll like them. I like some of the concepts, but there's only one, San Junipero, I think, is the episode that I thought was really worthy of the name. The rest of them are kind of a little disappointing. It's still worth watching, but I've been looking forward to this for a long time.
Its pedigree was very strong.
Yeah. Have they already said they're doing a season four?
And, yeah,
like,
they've already announced a season four.
Jodie Foster is going to be involved like that?
I'm a little worried they're going to do a thing where it's going to be like, oh, well, maybe it would have been better if they never did anymore.
Like, they gave it a budget and they ruined it.
Yeah.
Again, I'd like to check it out, though, just to take a to peek in.
It's worth watching, but I would say if you're going to watch it, it is, like Netflix's other anthology show, easy. You don't have to watch it in order. I would start with the San Junipero episode, which I believe is episode four, if you want to get a sense of what the best of it is, and then go from there. Nick, you've been listening to a new podcast.
Yeah, as always, I'm always checking things out. A lot of them I don't continue with. But there's a new one that I found called Secrets, Crimes, and Audio Tape, which is sort of just one-offs or three-act kind of plays in a lot of ways.
Uh-huh.
You know, written actually by a lot of playwrights, different ones. And the big things about them is they feature really, like, known actors. There's one that's about the Kennedy assassination, sort of the moments afterwards involving Johnson and, you know, conspiracy angles on that, that has Stacey Keach as Lyndon Johnson. There's one that just dropped yesterday, I guess it was, and it had Bradley Whitford's wife from Malcolm in the Middle.
Oh, Jane Kaczmarek.
Yeah, Kaczmarek, sort of about... weirdly, love contracts at, like, large corporations.
Huh.
There's also one about a husband and wife, played by Jenna Elfman and her actual husband, about a woman waking up in the middle of the night and realizing she doesn't love her husband anymore, and sort of the things that occur after that, and sort of the weird ways that they try to rekindle their relationship.
So wait, is this fiction or nonfiction?
It's fiction. They're stories.
Okay.
They're stories being told.
But it sounded like the other ones were stories of different historical periods.
There are, but they're sort of audio dramas in a lot of ways. Just telling, you know, possible
stories. Is there a narrator?
I forget his name. There's just one guy who sort of, courts all of it. David Reinstrom sort of handles kind of narration and things like that.
But okay, it's so it's not just like a bunch of people talking, like, dialogue-driven?
I mean, the stories are.
Uh-huh.
And he just kind of, like, intros and
outros. Rod Serling's it?
Yeah, a little bit. I just find the stories to be very compelling. They're very character-driven and interesting.
Hmm.
They're, like I said, it's odd to find ones that are just sort of one-offs or even just a couple of, episodes. usually they're like stuff like Bright Sessions, long story arcs and black tapes and things like that. So,
Bright Sessions is back, by the way.
I know. I haven't listened to the first episode.
Season 3 is back.
Yeah. They've actually just had some weird crossovers with like Ars Paradoxica.
There was very big stuff in that.
Yeah, they introduced a new character who it's really interesting. So.
Wait, you said they had a crossover with Ars Paradoxica?
They did.
They did. It was kind of
makes sense because they have a time traveler.
They have a time traveler. Weird,
I like that episode. It actually made me want to listen to Ars Paradoxica.
Ars Paradoxica is really fun. I know, Dave, I think you tried it out and weren't so enthralled with it.
I say really fun is more like really crap.
See, like with all podcasts, I feel like, I mean, the first couple of episodes are sort of them just trying to find themselves a little bit. And the stories...
But you're less choosy on podcasts than me and Dave because you have more time for them, it seems like. I've got time for like six, and that's it. So it's got to hit a certain threshold.
I guess when I drive. I mean, I have like a 15 to 20 minute drive.
Yeah, you drive more than me.
I guess.
I can't listen in my car because I don't have a thing that plays podcasts.
And also, when he's in his car, Dave likes to primal scream all the way to and from work.
That's
true. Yeah. You probably heard me.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this, you probably heard me at some point in Austin.
Yeah.
You can do better.
No. Let's not primal scream for our listeners.
Was that within the first season of, by the way, Bright Sessions?
No, it was a break between season 2 and 3.
Oh, okay, I must not have heard that. I think I've heard the first 2 seasons.
Yeah, it's a new episode that popped up a couple weeks ago.
Was the finale of season 2 the kind of, like, infiltration
thing? The heist, yeah.
Yeah, that's as far as I am.
Yeah, they've done a couple. They did a Zoe, is it Zoe? Chloe.
Chloe
had sort of auto diaries where she was on, audio diaries where she was like driving around and recording her thoughts.
That's cool.
And then they did the Ars Paradoxica thing.
I will enjoy catching up on those.
Yeah, it's amazing that she just does that from her like one like bedroom apartment in New York. It's crazy.
Yep.
Did they say how she gets the sound quality good?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know that.
Usually they have to go into like, you know, quieter rooms, but I've heard ways that people who will. I know at least one person who, like, records in their closet or something, I remember, because...
You can ask somebody sitting right next to you who does actual podcasts.
No, I have no idea they get sound out of their equipment. At any rate, that will close it out for us this week.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be back next week with more, and until that time...
Yo, Jojo!
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating or review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.